It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running. It is the 7th day of June, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to participate in the chat room this evening. I say the same thing every evening, so you probably already know unless you just now started listening to the program this very instant. But anyway, run on over to HeadOn.live, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump on in, Anatole will tell you hi, Squeaky will tell you hi, VT Blom will say hi, I might even say hi, and in fact, pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan will certainly say hi. Longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, is a spacing guild master, of course, and he has folded space to go to the orthopedist this afternoon. He'll be along later. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, what a magnificent day. What a magnificent, beautiful, breathtakingly wonderful day. Yes, I had to be chased into the studio by the lovely and not-to-be-trifled-with Agnes. Because days like this, you don't get a lot of them. Days like this that approach perfection, really, they're kind of rare as hen's teeth. And in point of fact, if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or over on Instagram, you'll know that I was out in the sun today. That's where that vampire noise comes in. Right? No, I was out in the sun today, but fortunately for me, I had a magnificent piece of clothing from my favorite, ethical and admirable clothing company, Patagonia. I had something, this is something that I got because of a gift a couple of Christmases back, but it's a Tropic Comfort hoodie. Light, airy, and provides SPF 50 plus perfection. And it's got a great big hood that you can actually pull all the way over your face, and you can button it together below you, and your entire head's covered. You can't see where you're going, but if you're just sitting there in the sun, you're pretty well protected. We were over at Summersville Lake. Just a beautiful, beautiful day. I got to hear the... It was made the more so because it was accompanied by the laughter of grandchildren and the smiling of Agnes and the happiness of eldest daughter. And so, yeah, they kind of had to chase me into the studio. Got to go to work now, Bob. Got to go to work. Oh, well, okay. Got to come in. No, you can't weed eat for the next... You can't weed eat till sundown, Bob. Such days. Such days. Such days. But I'm here, and I'm glad you're there, even if you're there several hours from now when you're listening to the podcast. Hi, podcast friends. I'm live. It's 5 minutes past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. But I'm also there whenever it is that you're listening, and I'm awfully glad you are. That's one of the little miracles of modern media is that people get to listen whenever they want to, and that makes it I think that's a step forward. Of course, during the live portion of the program means that we get to engage in some conversation from time to time. We love having new callers, things like that, and. It goes without saying that if you enjoy this program, then I heartily encourage you to tell your friends and neighbors and help build the community here so that we've got more people participating podcast-wise, more people participating live broadcast-wise. We build the community and we build the discussion and we build the dialogue, and that's how we create a broader conversational community. Of course, it being the beginning of the program, we, of course, have thanks to send out. Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you very, very kindly indeed to our buddy Dr. Allen in Texas. And thank you very much indeed to Reed in California. Those are our two subscribers for this, the seventh day of the month. If you would like to be one of the merry little band of not quite 100 subscribers, well, by Jove, you can do that right over at HeadOn.live. Just click the PayPal button or the Patreon button and jump right in. And it's no joke when we say that this is a listener-supported operation. That's the only way we're on the air. Years and years and years ago, Agnes and I exhausted our ability to keep the program on the air. The program began with the generosity of Boss Man Wayne, who helped to provide the studio with all the necessities that we needed to get on the air. And we stay on the air through the good graces of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And we try to raise $200 every evening. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. And so we find ourselves on this Thursday, the 7th of June. We're behind by $530 in fundraising coming toward the close of the first full week of June 2018. We're behind by 530. If we don't take a bite out of that this evening, we'll be behind by 730 tomorrow night. And, you know, then after that, well, it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. And then eventually the program goes away. And I find myself standing up and saying, "Hi, welcome to Walmart," you know, or something like that. So if we could knock down that $530, God Almighty, it sure would be helpful. But I've grown so I hate fundraising so much that I'm really not going to say much more about it. Okay, when we get to the end of the program, I'll tell you where we're at. And if we knock that down, we knock it down. If we don't, we don't. So $530 is the fundraising goal this evening. Let's see, where to begin this evening? Well, you know, I've long been highly critical of my ability to carry a tune. Kind regards and thanks going out to our buddy Flavio in La Crosse, Wisconsin, for saying, "Don't sell yourself short on your singing voice." Well, thank you, Flavio. Thank you. I don't think the rest of the Horn Family Community Congregation feels the way you do, but just the same, I'm afraid there's going to have to be some singing. And I apologize in advance, but I don't know any other way to do it. Maybe if I had the grandkids here, I could let them sing it, and maybe it would have maybe it would have a little bit more force and effect. Don't worry. not going to sing God Bless America or anything like that. Prairies and prairies. Me. No, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm gonna sing a song, and we all know this tune. Or I would say 99% of us know this tune. Even the maggots know this tune. You'll recognize it right away. You ready? Where's that damn pitch pipe when I need it? Here we go. You know, if I'd thought about it, I could have gotten Guy James to take care of this part for us. He has a beautiful, beautiful singing voice. Guy does. Unfortunately, I don't. You ready? Maybe put the cats in another room. The dog's prone to howling. Open up the doors to the house. If there are any mice or anything, they'll probably run screaming out into the yard and maybe drown themselves, you know, 'cause Bob's singing. Lockdown, lockdown, lock the door. Shut the lights off, say no more. Go behind the desk and hide. Wait until it's safe inside. Lockdown, lockdown, it's all done. Now it's time to have some fun. Yes, that's the lockdown song from the kindergarten in Somerville, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. That's how we teach children in the United States of America now. That's how we teach children to be prepared to be murdered in school. That's not a joke. It's not something catchy that I came up with to propagandize against guns and freedom. That's really how children are taught at a tender, precious age. Little kindergartners, you know. I saw kids, you know, kindergarten age, running around at the lake today, frolicking and having fun. And hey, they survived another school year in America. They have a right to have fun. They have a right to celebrate. Because we value Smith & Wesson and Remington Arms and Winchester and Glock and Beretta. And ever so many more gun manufacturers than we value kindergartners. Yeah. It's... the Boston Globe had the story. Georgie Cohen, in that story at the Boston Globe, said that she took a picture and shared it on Twitter after she found it on a poster that she described as jarring in her 5-year-old daughter's Somerville Public School classroom in Massachusetts. Ms. Cohen said, "When I was in kindergarten, we had fire drills. It was different. We didn't have these same types of threats. And you, and she continued, she said, these are the things they unfortunately have to do. I get it. Her tweet it got something like 30,000 likes in one day. She told the Boston Globe, "To be shocked by it is important. To see that absurdity and horror and have that sick feeling in your stomach is important. Stay outraged. And if it gets somebody to do something, to give money to an organization or to call their representatives, then great. I think that's important. As of airtime, the Somerville Public School District had not released any sort of a statement. But the fact of the matter is, there is something, jarring is the word for the juxtaposition of a song that other generations learned about as Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, How I Wonder What You Are, Up Above the World So High, Like a Diamond in the Sky, creating a sense of wonder in a child for the unreachable vastness of the heavens and space. We're raising more practical children now. We can't have them looking up at the sky, because while they're looking up at the sky, our children might be slaughtered in their seats because this country, again, especially via the National Rifle Association, values guns more than kindergartners. And that's the long and the short of it. Better that we're having this, conversation perhaps on a day when 15, 17, 27 kids weren't slaughtered than, you know, when they are.
What's your alternative, Kincaid? You want them to not teach the children what to do when the shooter comes in?
No, I want us to stop having school shootings. I want the NRA to dissolve and be disbanded and go the hell away forevermore, so that there will be nobody out there lobbying on behalf of gun manufacturers and gun owners and treating them like they're more important than our babies. That's what. Agnes turned me on to this story. Her comment accompanying it said simply, "I'm so freaking angry, I want to round up mothers to guard the schools." Maybe that's a beginning. No, you sick little gun humper, you got to get through the mamas before you get to their babies. Not teachers with guns. Mothers with hearts bursting with love. After all, wasn't it in Talibandiana, a stronghold of Second Amendment love in America, where a man with no gun at all stopped a kid with a gun, saved lives? Maybe instead of having children learn repurposed nursery rhymes, we could convince the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians to not let their kids get their guns.
Dad, can I borrow the key to the gun safe?
Go on, son. You silly boy, I love you. You know Daddy doesn't keep his guns in the gun safe unless we're going away on vacation. It's right there in the nightstand drawer, and it's fully loaded. What do you need it for?
Oh, I just want to shoot up the school.
Ha, 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 ha. Well, you go right ahead, son. God bless America. That reminds me, my NRA dues are due. Mm-hmm. Glenn in New York says, "That's fucked. Wonderful song, huh? I remember duck and cover drills in grade school. I'll be 63. Glenn, by the way, says, "My birthday's Saturday, the 9th, so $25 challenge to anyone, especially any geologists out there. We got any other geologists in the Horn Family Community Congregation? We're holding this challenge. Okay, how about geologists, geographers? How about anybody whose profession involves the word geo, which of course is a Greek root for the word earth? How about any earth scientist? Thank you, Glenn. Thank you very kindly. Many happy returns. Ralph's is offering a $25 challenge. And so that would make, for $50 worth of challenges, that's $100. And, lest I forget, because I didn't, Rico in DeBerg, remembering Punky from a couple of nights ago, has offered a $50 challenge. Rico said that he was absolutely, brokenhearted to hear of Punky's passing and was reminded of all the animals he has loved over the course of the years. So there are $100 worth of challenges on the table, and that would, if those were met, that would knock down a day's worth of broadcasting. Thank you. Thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Glenn, and thank you to Rico. Thank you all very much. And thanks to Jack in Shreveport, who got us started and got us down below the $500 mark. We're at $480 now, thanks to Jack in Shreveport. Thank you very, very kindly, Jack. And, Steve in New York says, "Oh, dear, dear Bob, that song is the sound of freedom. God bless Merca. Why do you hate Merca, Bob?" I know. Cause see, it's a binary choice. You can either love freedom, which means you love Merca, which means you love guns, or you can love children. You can't do both. We live in a strictly binary world. 0-1-1-0-0-1-0-0-0-1-1-1-1. That's it. And thanks, Steve. Thanks, Steve, very kindly for noticing that. Yes. So, that's our starting place. An America where Republicans and some Democrats are so utterly disconnected and disinterested in our future, namely our children, that they spend all their time with their noses up the fundaments of people like Dana Lush and Wayne the Peter and Ted Pantslode Nugent and Greg Stinkfield and Coleon Noir, making sure that the gun fetishists are happy. Instead of making sure our children are safe, because this is a good. I mean, I don't want to say that. You know, I'm not angry at the teacher who came up with that. That's creative. It conveys basic necessary information. You got to lock the door. You got to turn the lights off. You got to be really quiet, children. You got to hide under your desk. You got to wait till it's safe. And then once it's over, we can go back to having fun. The horror is that we have to teach our children this at all. And yes, over time, we've had to teach our children other things that we would rather not teach them about. We had drills, yes, when I was in school, and mostly our early alert system was used for tornadoes. But it also doubled as a warning that maybe the Reds had finally pushed the button down and it was time for the nuclear holocaust to begin. Mostly, though, it was tornadoes and then fires. It became necessary, although God knows Republicans resisted this, it became necessary to teach children, especially adolescents, that in a post-HIV world, just having sex, like practically every teenager dreams of doing, more than just a driver's license isn't sex. You know, that's adolescence. that it could kill them. So we had to teach children, adolescents, how not to die from having sex. Here's a condom. And, of course, just like they resist the realities here, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians resisted the idea of telling children what condoms did because Jesus. Because purity. And so, of course, children got sexually transmitted diseases. And, of course, and you know, the sexually transmitted disease rate is higher in places that have high concentrations of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians than places that tend more toward rational, science-based heathens. And I mean heathens in a good way. All right. Note coming in from, wordplay, from Brother Deacon Asa. As the self-styled resident horn curmudgeon, emphasis on the G-E-O in curmudgeon, see what I did there? I see what you did there. I'm matching Glenn's challenge and passing it on, hoping somebody else will pick it up and run with it. So, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. That means there remains $100 worth of challenges on the table. And there's still a big opportunity for anybody who works in a field that's associated with geo. Geology. Geography. Geolocation. Geo, isn't this a wonderful time we're having? Yes. Did I really? Bill in Allentown says, 1100, 1100. You just made an accidental Star Trek reference. I watched The Next Generation on Netflix, and the title of the episode was the subject line, 1100, 1100. Well, there's no getting away from the obligatory Star Trek reference. But if you want to, discuss that, I welcome it. And I think that's pretty creative on the part of the teacher. But it's the comment that it makes on our culture, that we are such a helpless lot that we cannot do something as simple as keeping guns out of the hands of people who would use them to slaughter our children. And if that doesn't qualify as a thorn in the side, that story, I don't know that we've ever had a story that did. That may be the thorniest thorn in the side we've ever had here. Because it is, in fact, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've got a veritable bouquet of thorns. Note coming from Larry. Preaching abstinence while not offering any form of contraceptive or birth control to the youth of America has always been an effective method. LOL. Just like preaching scare stories to the youth of America that smoking a joint will lead to slamming heroin. All wonderful white-wing ideas down through the decades. Randy in PA says, it's learned helplessness. Just look at, for instance, Trump's non-removal. I know. But, you know, we had the story the other day about David Hogg's home getting swatted by some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christian. And we know that they're getting scared, and we know that they know they're losing. And out of all the horror, and out of all the bloodshed, and out of all the anguish, and the tragedy, and the misery, and the nightmares, and the ongoing agony, that came out of that particular school massacre, maybe, just maybe, a process has begun whereby we can fix this. Look, there's only 5 million members of the National Rifle Association. They are, for all intents and purposes in the United States, a fucking rounding error. It's just that when you let the rounding errors have tax-free status and lots of money, they exercise an outsized influence. But we see that all over the place in this country. I live in a state that is, in spots, breathtakingly beautiful. If you follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, you'll see a little a photo I posted earlier today it's from an overlook right on the side of the road. Anybody driving down the road can stop and take the same picture I took. I didn't have to go anywhere. You know, there's no special genius to it. Of a place on Somersville Lake called Long Point. And on a day like today, it was just breathtakingly beautiful. And there are many such places in this state, but there are also places like Neoma, West Virginia, which is being reduced to a hellscape, as have so many of the communities in that same area. And all because an industry, not in this case tax-free, but tax-supported, tax-subsidized coal, an industry has a death grip on this state's government that is outsized compared to who they actually are. This is not 1980 West Virginia when there were 100,000 or more coal miners. This is a West Virginia where coal miners are outnumbered by school teachers, where coal miners are outnumbered by Walmart workers, where coal miners are outnumbered by nurses, by certified nurses' aides, by freaking florists. And perhaps even by funeral directors. And yet, like the NRA, and deadly like the NRA, they continue to control the levers of government because of the amount of money that they pour into government. And so the idea that we have that little nursery rhyme, it shocks the conscience. But what is far more infuriating is that in coming up with lesson plans for kindergarten, a dedicated teaching professional had to spend time coming up with that little ditty instead of trying to figure out a way to teach children to read more quickly, earlier, grasp basic mathematical concepts, understand that you don't eat the Play-Doh. I mean, there are important things to be taught in kindergarten besides, hi, kids, we love you. We're so happy to have you here at school. There's a distinct possibility that an awful human being supported through an anachronism called the Second Amendment is going to come in here and murder you someday. So let's be prepared so you won't be one of the murder victims. And remember, where the NRA is concerned, your Dana Lushes and your Greg Stinkfields and your Coleon Noir, really? Black Bowel? Hey, it's just how it translates. Whenever there's a school, they like to say, well, you're just trying to hurt the people who don't do nothing wrong. The school shooting has never been perpetrated by a member of the NRA. But then, when things calm down, they'll get back to saying, "Hi, we're the NRA. We represent gun owners all across America. We represent every gun owner." Check them. They'll tell you they don't just represent people who have joined the NRA. They represent, by God, everybody who owns a goddamn gun. And by extension, when, say, Daddy leaves his Freedom Protector on the nightstand there, you know, right next to the lube, and Sonny Boy takes it with him to school because some girl won't go to the prom with him and she needs to be taught a lesson, you know, a terminal one. Well, the NRA represents that daddy gun owner, don't they? Because they say they do. Larry says, maybe it was Dana Lush's husband, Snidely Whiplash, who made that fake call on the Hog House. They are truly despicable. No, Larry, they're not despicable. They will tell you proudly that they are deplorable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yesterday was D-Day. And so, consequently, you know, I marked the occasion, or I not marked, but noted it at the beginning of the program. And in so noting, you know, pointed out the massive logistical triumph that it was and the great spilling of human blood that it was. But at least I had the parties right. I mentioned how the Third Reich had pretty much taken Western Europe and had rendered it into something that was referred to as Fortress Europa. Fortress Europa. I mentioned the Atlantic Wall. And again, this is a thorn. It's all thorns. There's no blooms. Heather Nauert, N-A-U-E-R-T, Heather Nauert, is a spokesperson for the United States Department of State, hired specifically for the purpose by the Trump regime, and she came right over from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, where she was, an attack blonde, and she explained a couple of days ago. No kidding. That commemorating the D-Day invasion was an example of the long-standing, sweet Jesus, get the hockey puck. I mean, duct tape it down real good. Make sure, can't annoy the neighbors. She explained that the commemoration of the D-Day invasion was proof positive of the long-standing positive relationship that the United States has had with the government of Germany. I'll just take a second and let the spasms and the screaming pass. Oh, no, she didn't. Oh, yes, she did. Oh, I mean, Normandy's in France, right? That must have meant we were attacking France. I mean,
Well, I mean, obviously, Normandy's not in Germany. We were attacking France. Because France didn't want us to set foot on French soil. 1944, June the 6th. Right? Hmm. I mean, but then there's her name. Nauert. N-A-U-E-R-T. Nauert. Which I'm pretty sure is not Italian. Portuguese or Greek? We can check in with Flavio to see if it's Portuguese. Maybe it is Portuguese. I don't know. I don't know much about Portuguese. But I'm pretty sure it's not. But for Heather Nauert not to know who was on which side, in particular at D-Day, is rather like someone whose last name is Sitting Bull thinking that George Armstrong Custer was rushing to the aid of Native Americans at Little Bighorn.
a little language lesson courtesy of Flavio. Quillon, C-O-U-I-L-L-O-N, Quillon, dimwit, fool, dumbass. French to English. Quillon, pain in the neck, blighter, bastard, scoundrel, rotter, louse. Wiktionary, Quillon, mug, gonad, bollocks, bimbo. Quillon, vapid. Quillon, chucklehead, dumbhead, dimwit, fool, simpleton. Are you suggesting, Flavio, my friend, are you suggesting that Heather Nauert is a Quillon? Have I got that right? The double L's, the O-U-I that's we, and the C in front of Quillon. Yeah, you got to work that nasal in there. Because if you are, you've just earned yourself a cowbell. But that's America, where members of the Trump regime are quite sure that the Nazis had to be good people. You know, there were that whole World War II thing. It's just like Charlottesville. There were good people on both sides. Very good people. Very good. And that is why, it's another thorn. Son of a gun, how's about we travel out to, and this might be a little bit shocking, but we'll just have to learn to deal with it. How about we travel out to Washington State, which we tend to think of as a very blue place. But I've got a news story here from the Huffington Post that shows a white guy with a scanty black 3 or 4 days growth of beard, wearing his maggot hat and holding an unlighted bamboo, I presume it's bamboo, tiki torch. We all know what that means. That's the modern equivalent. That's the 2018 United States of America equivalent of a brown shirt. We are, in fact, talking about a Nazi who prefers that you think of him as a white nationalist. Well, James Alsup, over the weekend, went on his Facebook page to show a little piece of paper that declared to the world that he has been elected as the precinct committee officer for Precinct 129 in Whitman County, Washington, of the Republican Party of Washington State. Now, let's be fair, there were no challenges for the office. But nonetheless, as Whitman County's Facebook page points out,
a precinct committee officer is the backbone of the Republican Party. They elect the Republican leaders in their counties. He's a 2017 graduate of Washington State University. Cougars, I believe they are. And he was a college Republican. He was an advisor to Students for Trump on the Washington State campus. But most importantly, when American neo-Nazis put out the call for other neo-Nazis to join them in a march, he went all the way from Washington State to Charlottesville, Virginia, to march in the Unite the Right rally, in which one person was murdered and considerably more were injured when the Nazis rioted. But I'm sure that if you asked the President of the United States, he would tell you that James Alsup is one of those fine, very fine people who were on both sides of that horror. Now, he's also a member or aligned with Identity Evropa. No, really, they spelled E-V-R-O-P-A. That's another neo-Nazi organization. The Southern Poverty Law Center said that James Alsup has pursued his Nazism, quote, through the infiltration of the Republican Party rather than by the radical revolutionary action favored by vanguardist groups on the extreme fringe. In other words, he's succeeding. Instead of standing on the outside looking in, he wants to just finish, not start, but finish the takeover of the Republican Party of and its capture as a wholly owned subsidiary of white supremacy. A year or so ago, James Alsup, Nazi, told a podcast called Fash the Nation. He said, a college student with three or four fashy goy friends, fash meaning fascism, three or four fashy goy friends could, goy, you know, that's the, well, never mind, you know, could take over college Republican groups and, quote, move it to essentially being an alt-right club. And along the way, force all the cucks out of the Republican Party. As recently as a week or so ago, he was being interviewed on the podcast for Identity Evropa, and he said that he expects the infiltration of the Republican Party to continue apace. You have a seat at the table, and that's the most important thing, getting that seat at the table. And you can get that seat at the table by, yes, showing up. Yes, by bringing people in. Now, I've just scrolled all the way through the Huffington Post story. Datelined the 5th of June, 2018. You know what's not in there? Any remark from any Republican saying that there is no place in the Republican Party for the likes of James Alsup. Because, of course, there is. There absolutely, positively is. So, yeah, like I said, thorns. Lots and lots of them, as a matter of fact. The fallout is beginning to, you know, remember how when the wedding cake case came out earlier this week, everybody pointed out, and I did too, that it was narrowly decided. Now, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time, and John Cornyn of Texas are both lawyers, and they both, in celebrating that Supreme Court ruling by the Kennedy kid, said, well, it was 7-2. I don't know how that could be conveyed. I don't see how you could see that as a narrow decision. That's a whopping majority. Narrowly decided means that it was decided, not broadly. That it didn't have vast and sweeping implications. That it was decided strictly with regard to that case and no other cases. That it was decided in regard to that case within that particular set of circumstances and the law as it existed at that time and not post-Obergefell. But still, John Cornyn and Ted Cruz, that was a big win for us. And you know, white wing the white wing sexuality police are having an absolute ecstasy over the matter. Okay, here's a good example of a case narrowly decided: Bush v. Gore. They said specifically in the case that Bush v. Gore was a one-off. It was sui generis. And it could never be even so much as cited to support any other legal proposition. That they were going to author the opinion, sign the opinion, and legalistically they were going to put it in a lead-lined coffin and bury it at midnight. Didn't quite work out that way. And the narrowly decided wedding cake case is not looking too narrow after all. As it turns out. In fact, let's take a look at at a hardware store. A hardware store in Tennistan. Jeff Amyx, A-M-Y-X, owns him a hardware store in Tennistan. And in celebration, this is so sickening. In celebration of the narrow wedding cake decision, Jeff Amyx hung a sign in the windows of his store. It read simply, "No gays allowed." This is probably the appropriate time for me to note that Jeff Amyx, hardware store owner, is also a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Baptist minister. Because God is love, y'all! Really? Just ask Jeff Amix. Jeff Amix will tell you. Because he uses things like, hate the sin and not the sinner, which is a long, which is a bullshit phrase of long standing from the evangelical right. He's in Granger County, Tennessee. That's over in the far eastern end of Tennessee. That's, well, the northeast portion of Tennessee. I'll bet you our buddy Charlie, who grew up over that way, I'll bet you he knows where Granger County, Tennessee is. Granger County, Tennessee has been around since 1796. Once upon a time, say, you know, 157 years ago, that corner of Tennessee didn't want anything to do with secession. Because it was a lot more, mostly it was hardscrabble farmers and hillbillies, and not so much in the way of slavery. But times change. Yes, they do. And when he was interviewed, Baptist minister Jeff Amix said, "It's a ray of sunshine and it's a great win, that Supreme Court case." That's why he put up his "No Gays Allowed" sign in the window of his hardware store. Next day, he changed the sign to say, "We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone who would violate our rights of freedom of speech and freedom of religion." But that was just a little too legalistic, and it wasn't getting the job done, and I guess maybe some people came down and said, you some sort of sissy homo using words like that? So he took that one back down. He put the "No Gays Allowed" sign back up. Now, tell you what, you know, we've talked about the issue of capacity in grassroots activism before, but and capacity is definitely an issue. But could one of y'all reach out to whoever it is that control? Yeah, I don't know if it's the Gay Illuminati or the Gay Bohemian Grove or the Gay Rothschilds or whatever. But could y'all, maybe the gay Freemasons, the Gay Shriners, could y'all reach out to them and see if maybe they could get about 10,000 people in front of Jeff Amix's store and sort of blockade it until it goes out of business, please? Because you know what? Neither Granger County nor the United States of America needs anything like that here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century. Matt out in San Francisco says, "I got an idea what he can do with his plungers." Well, anybody manifesting that much animosity toward gay people's probably already tried it, Matt. Latency in the closet are horrible, horrible things. And then, of course, by what, because you know these evangelical fundamentalist freaks, they don't so much climb up on the crosses. They got pogo sticks, and he got busy. Jeff Amix did. "This is happy days for Christians all over America, but dark days will come. Christianity's under attack. This is a great win. Don't get me wrong, but this is not the end. This is just the beginning. Because there's a war on Christians." Oddly enough, the guy who marched in and shot up a Baptist church in, Sutherland, Texas, that wasn't no big old gunned up homer sectional, or even an ally. Nope. If you walk into his hardware store, you can buy a bumper sticker that says, "Choose God or gays." Yeah. You don't even have to buy it. He'll give you the bumper sticker. God or gays, compliments of Amex Hardware, Washburn, Tennessee. But he's being persecuted, just like Jesus said he would. It says right there in the book, "Yea, verily, you shall be persecuted for my name's sake, for not for hating of homosexuals when I ain't said a damn thing about it." And it's all right there in the red letters in the New Testament. Jesus. Meanwhile, Stephen New York says, subject line, "No gays allowed." I'm hoping that someone puts up a "No Christians allowed" sign or a "No Jews allowed." Bob, I want this so they'll finally expose themselves for who they are. Regarding Matt and his ideas about the plungers, Steve says, "I'm sure that saltine antenna stand would like that." You can probably buy it. Never mind. No sense elaborating. No. Well, the fact of the matter is, remember the key phrase, the one that just leapt off those disgusting pages of that 7-2 opinion. The finding that the state of Colorado had exhibited religious hostility to the bigot Baker. Yeah. But seriously, what if there was a movement in which many of the industries and many of the businesses that have a lot of gay folks in them, and I've argued this for years, and mainly it doesn't happen because, well, we're a small community, and two, the gay community, I think, is a little bit more decent than the evangelical Christian community. But what if businesses with a high number of gay people working in them were to hang signs on the door that says, We don't serve evangelical Christians. Well, see, they'd be in court in a minute with the Christians trying to put them out of business, saying that they were being hostile to their deeply held religious beliefs. Incidentally, there was no proof that I was aware of in the wedding cake case of Christians who found no hostility whatsoever in telling a baker that he could not discriminate against an entire class of people. You can find the whole and including an interview, if you actually want to listen to what this disgusting bigot has to say. The story was published at the New Civil Rights Movement, and it includes a link to an interview done by WBIR. If you really feel like you have to listen to the guy say that in plain language. Jim, with a note, who passed along his condolences on Punky the other day, I guess Jim just heard about Punky, but passed along his condolences. Thank you, Jim. What does that fool do, Jim asks. when customers view his merchandise. Signage. No gaze. G-A-Z-E. You get a cowbell for that, Jim.
Yes.
Robert in Australia says, you mean the 19th century, don't you, Bob? Because this isn't the 21st century I was expecting. Yeah, can we send the 21st century back for a redo? Do-over! Because it's not working out. And as our buddy Reverbo would point out, we are still sadly lacking in helium-filled pants. Because, you know, those things were really going... Those things were going to just change the helium-filled pants. Can you imagine? Space-age Americans floating all over the place. Absolutely. That's almost as cool as those, and I saw some today out at the lake, and I'm strongly tempted, but I also have to remember that I'm a former English major and not particularly well-suited to things involving coordination. But I saw people out on the lake. It was pretty glassy, and they were just standing up on what appeared to be surfboards. I think they were a little more sturdy than surfboards. It's a new thing, paddle boarding. Standing up on what looked like surfboards and using a really, really long oar to just sort of paddle around the lake. And it's a big lake. And deep, too.
I'll take a boat. Thank you.
Well, thank you, dear.
I don't glide on
our,
the water.
Our daughter wants a paddle board.
Well, I'm sure she does.
And little froggies want wings so they won't bump their butts when they hop.
That's right. You want to canoe it? That's fine. Paddle boarding? No. Just no.
Oh, now see, you're going to, Agnes, you're going to get the Paddle Boarders Association of America
it's
right on top of it.
I don't, that I have a problem
I don't know
with
if we
boarding.
We have a hard enough time keeping this program on the air as
no,
it is.
No, 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 wait. We all know that they call me Grace for a reason, and it is genetically inheritable. Okay, paddle boarding, no. I'm lucky to walk and not trip on my shoelaces. And my children, they're the same way. Our children.
We can't take Bob when we go to the lake because he's going to trip on a toenail and he's gonna drown.
That's not even funny. No. Don't make me turn this show around, buddy.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We'll be in the van. Yeah.
That's
right. So we've got that. Mr. Amix there in Tennistan, but and if he was a one-off, it would be okay. He ain't a one-off. Nope, we need to go out to South Dakota Stan. We had a South Dakota Stan Republican just the other day. Well, this isn't the same South Dakota Stan Republican. This is a different Republican. This is representing Michael Clark of the South Dakota Stan State Legislature. And he got all giddy over the Supreme Court's wedding cake decision. He declared that the wedding cake decision was, quote, a win for freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And then, of course, he promptly deleted his comment because, you know, he's got the power of his convictions. But that wasn't where it ended. Nope, not at all. Because also on Facebook, somebody asked him about who else could be turned away from a business because of religion. And he responded to one question saying, well, it is his business. He should have the opportunity to run his business the way he wants. If he wants to turn away people of color, then that's his choice. Then, of course, he deleted his comment and the post. And he apologized. He said, I jumped in on it a little bit too fast. I'm apologizing for some of my Facebook comments. I would never advocate discriminating against people on their color or their race, except for when I do. I added that last part because it's true. Representing Clark, good
upstanding and good standing member of the Republican Party that he is, with strong libertarian leanings, one presumes, interviewed by the Argus Leader newspaper, and he said business owners ought to be able to turn away certain customers if having to deal with them would violate their religious beliefs. If it's truly his strongly based belief, he should be able to turn them away. People shouldn't be able to use their minority status to bully a business. Well, now, seems like he didn't retract that comment after all then, did he? See, the way he figures, eventually it'd catch up with the business owner, and consumers would then have to decide whether or not they wanted to do business with that business. The vote of the dollar, he said, is very strong. Very strong indeed. Which is roughly speaking, that's the same thing that Randy Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, said some years back when he was interviewed by Rachel Maddow in regard to the Civil Rights Act. That if it was up to him, he probably wouldn't have been for it, because, people will just... if people don't want discrimination, they can just stay away from the business, and the business can go out of business. And that's how the free market works. Only it really doesn't. American history certainly showed that it doesn't work that way. Nope. Sincerely, it doesn't. Marty with a note says, no gays allowed sign. How's he going to tell who's gay and who's not? Well, I guess you're going to have to fill out a survey, unless maybe you look gay, or sound gay, or act gay. And you don't necessarily have to have somebody with you in the business in order to look, act, or sound gay. I mean, you could just stand over, you could just stand over in front of the linoleum display and say, this linoleum is fabulous. Even if you are as straight as an arrow, if you meet his preconceived bigoted notions of gayness, well, it's like Sheldon Leonard says in It's a Wonderful Life, out you pixies go. You could be accompanied by your three or four wives and your small herd of all your sister wives from some offshoot brand of whatever from southern Utah, and everybody's walking and have 19 or 20 children in there, but if you said something about a product the wrong way, he'd know, because, see, he's got the power of Jesus Christ to tell him who the homos are. Jesus Christ knows all, sees all, tells the hardware store owner. You betcha. Damn right. Bill in Allentown asks, do you think they would turn away a Muslim, you slurper, or not? Oh, absolutely. This is the ultimate snowflake law. Because the real special snowflakes in America are evangelical Christians. And their faith is so thin and so watery and so pukey that it can't stand being around anything that might even remotely challenge them.
99% of evangelicals are scared to death that that one of these days yet they're just going to wake up one morning all homosexual and have to go and get married to some guy or some woman get married to some woman, you know, because it's legal now. And then where are their deeply held religious beliefs going to be? They'll have to go to one of them homo churches. And they don't got no good fire and brimstone sermonizing, damn it. See how it works? Yeah, Ron and Raleigh notes, well, Bob, I say no shirt, no shoes, no service. Civil Rights Act, to hell with that noise. White folks and Christians are being discriminated against wholesale. Well, it's more of a, you know, but I get what you're saying. It's a great day in America. At least it was a lovely day out at the lake. Okay, I'm having a hard time keeping up with the math, but we're going to take our break here in a second. And despite what Brother Deacon Asa said, I'm going to approach this in a different manner. I'm going to say that Brother Deacon Asa, because even though he did refer to himself as a curmudgeon, nah, Brother Deacon Asa, I'm going to say that you met that you met Ralph's challenge, and so that knocks that one down. And that leaves a $25 challenge on the table courtesy of Glenn. And that leaves a $50 challenge on the table courtesy of Rico and DeBerg. And so that's what remains. And then if anybody wants to respond and put forward Brother Deacon Ace's challenge, I think I can keep up with that, but I was rapidly getting lost. So we've got $75 worth of challenges remaining on the table. Okay, and that's awesome. Thanks, everybody. Jim with a note says, "Gay classification." Hell, let that poltroon put up a copy of the 1935 Nuremberg Laws. Ugh! Oh, you mean from our German allies in World War II? Because I had a note from Steve on precisely that topic. Our World War II German allies. I've lost my capacity to be surprised, shocked, and so forth. Something like that makes me think this is intentional. It does kind of feel that way, doesn't it? They'd be positively Orwellian. I did see that. Ron and Raleigh notes, hey, did you see that Dolt 45 gave an iftar dinner? You know, the feast for the end of Ramadan? And didn't invite any American Muslims? Well, Ron, did it ever occur to you that there's no self-respecting American Muslim that would show up to an iftar dinner at the White House? I mean, it's the Trumps. They were probably serving up deep-fried butterfly shrimp and you know, pulled pork barbecue and probably some pretty decent ribs, but no. I mean, if you were a good upstanding Koran believing Allah centered American Muslim, would you break your fast? I mean, it's special breaking that fast. Would you break your fast with Donald Trump and melanoma? Because I... No, not me. No, sir. No how. So we're pretty much... I mean, that's the biggest part of the filibuster. God knows we got more thorn in the side Thursday. But I do sincerely believe in the concept that we have established here of conversation radio. And I would like to make that... I enjoy the conversation aspect of it immensely. And that being the case, I'd like to open the phone lines up. If it turns out that you've got anything to add on any of the topics I've thus far raised, or something that's just burning a hole in your pockets that I haven't gotten to yet. This is the program that says, you know, you get to make that decision. So 304-574-8178 is the number. Toll free, it's 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid Horn. And all of that gets you into the program. It is a Thursday. That means we've got the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Oh, I need to run back to a clarification from Flavio real quick. I thought maybe he was suggesting that that Heather Nauert was a couillon. But no, in fact, Flavio was responding to the idea of Coleon Noir. Flavio suggested that Coleon, C-O-L-I-O-N, is a corruption of Couillon, which is entirely possible. But I think Ms. Nauert probably qualifies as well. Wouldn't you at least agree in that regard? Because I would. Okay. Thank you very kindly. Larry has jumped in on the challenges, as has Charlene. And that means we've made significant progress. Rico's challenge is met. And all but $7.50 of Glenn's challenge is met. So that's fantastic news. Thank you very much indeed to Larry and to Charlene. And thanks to Glenn and thanks to Rico and thanks to Ralphs earlier in the evening. All right, I've been called out. Brother Deacon Asa says, bullshit! Trump was serving burnt steak dinner with fucking ketchup on it. That's probably true. With, like, cold French fries. Agnes has left the room, but what are you trying to get on the fighting side of her? Brother Deacon Asa says, wait till we pool our Benjis and buy Bob a Hayabusa motorcycle, Miss Agnes. Apparently you like to play with fire, Asa. After 25 years, I have learned that when one does that, one gets burnt, downright scorched. So I will leave that entirely, and I do mean entirely, up to you, good sir. So yeah, it's break time, and we're doing a pretty passing fair job of knocking down some of the fundraising deficit.
Just paid a big old whopping power bill today. God damn that coal, that inexpensive coal-fired electricity is getting a little bit oppressive. But I did. More to come. And let's see, we started at 5:30. Jack took us down to 4:80. Rico's challenge gets met. That takes us down to 3:80. Ralph's challenge gets met. That takes us down to 3:30. And we've got 7:50 to go to finish Gwen's challenge, which will take us down to 2:80. So when that next, when that $7.50 rolls in, we will be at 2:80, and then we're all out of challenges, except for Brother Deacon Aces, who wants to carry it forward, and we're still waiting. And I got a feeling the other Geo folks listen on the podcasts, so please consider that challenge remaining open. the things y'all grab hold of. Burnt steak, says Ron and Raleigh. Well, all right, as long as it's halal. That's true. That is true. So, that may be the answer to the question. Now, the question of who did we fit, who was we a-fitting in the War of 1812, that's another question entirely. And, you know, I really would. We would benefit, I don't guess he's out there right now, but we would benefit from the wisdom of Ron in the far frozen north, or any other member of our community brothers and sisters from far Canada. That's for later. That's for later. So we'll take a break. This is listener supported conversation radio on a Thorn in the Side Thursday, the most beautiful day of 2018 thus far. This is the Horn. I'm Bob. We'll be back.
Anything goes. I look in the pot, I'm fit to fight. 'Cause woman, you know that mess ain't right. All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes. Yes, I'm steaming, I'm really screaming. All that meat and no potatoes. Thank you. Where's my fine ham bone? Where is it?
It's Thursday, June 7, 2018.
The biggest primary night of the year, with the most critical contest in California.
California voters choose climate action at the polls.
Even if this had been Scott Pruitt sending this EPA staffer out to get his wife a Chick-fil-A sandwich, that itself would be illegal under federal law.
Yet another ethics scandal for EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt. Federal judge orders EPA to cough up scientific evidence that humans are not driving climate change. Plus,
so the bottom line is preventing global warming is good business.
Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Accord could cost the U.S. economy trillions.
Fantastic. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Oh, science, you fickle mistress. No wonder so many people don't believe in you. Let's get this thing started.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a lot of folks watching the primary elections in California over the past week as Democrats hope to regain the U.S. House. But there were also some very important ballot measures at stake in the California election as well.
Exactly. On Tuesday, 8 states held primaries for that crucial November 2018 midterm election, and there were strong showings for progressive and Democratic candidates who all pledged to act on climate change and protect the environment and grow clean energy jobs. But as you say, in California, climate action was also on the ballot. A statewide ballot initiative posed by Republican state lawmakers would have blocked the state from spending billions of dollars in revenue from California's successful cap and trade carbon emissions program until 2024, and it would have required approval from 2/3 of the legislature to get any projects going.
So basically, money coming in to the state from this cap and trade program, and the Republicans had a scheme to try and tie up all of that money from being spent?
To block it entirely. But voters resoundingly rejected that, and instead, they chose to pass separate initiatives expanding outdoor recreation, land conservation and water projects, and repairing transportation infrastructure.
Little wonder Republicans are now on the endangered species list themselves out here in California.
And meanwhile, yet another new scandal to add to the already long list for Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt. Internal emails show that Pruitt enlisted top EPA staffers to do personal errands for him on the government's time, a violation of federal law, like helping him try to get a Chick-fil-A franchise set up for his wife, finding him an apartment in D.C., and, this one's kind of weird, obtaining a used Trump Hotel luxury mattress for him. That aide resigned on Wednesday.
I'm not sure what's weirder, that used mattress from the Trump Hotel or trying to get his wife a Chick-fil-A franchise.
Pruitt's EPA also lost in court this week. The chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia ordered the EPA to cough up scientific research to support Pruitt's claims in media interviews that he believes humans are not the primary driver of global warming.
Uh-oh.
The judge called it, quote, particularly troubling that the EPA refused to fulfill a public records request and show a scientific basis for Pruitt's assertion, and instead, the EPA claimed, the question of whether humans are responsible for climate change is, quote, unknowable. Needless to say, the global scientific community disagrees.
And apparently, so does the court. Thank God we still have them.
Meanwhile,
the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
This week marked 1 year since President Trump announced his intention to withdraw from the historic United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. But according to a new study from Stanford University, abandoning the Paris climate deal would cost the U.S. economy trillions of dollars in damages for things like extreme weather disasters and rising sea levels. The study found that meeting the Paris Agreement's emissions targets would save the global economy about $20 trillion in avoided economic losses, and in the U.S. alone, it would save the U.S. economy $6 trillion. In an interview with CBS, climate economist Noah Diefenbaugh explained that the cost of transitioning away from fossil fuels is vastly outweighed by the benefits.
We find that not only most countries are likely to benefit, but the United States is likely to benefit when we compare the the cost of achieving the lower levels of global warming with the damage that will be avoided, it turns out to be a very large return on investment.
They calculate that every $1 we spend to decarbonize returns $10 to $30 in economic benefits. It's important to note that the study does not account for the loss of market share from failing to keep up with the rest of the world as it transitions away from fossil fuels.
So everyone benefits, everyone that is, except Donald Trump, because Fox News told him that climate change was a hoax. And he's got to keep up the lie. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
What does the fox say?
Music. Me, I prefer the fat swaller we had going into the break. All that meat and no potatoes from 1941. It is 24 minutes before the hour. We're a little more than halfway through the program for the 7th day of June, 2018. And, we got more thorns to deal with, but we've also got Jim on the line. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
I'm okay. I love your breaker music or your bumper music, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah, you can't. Fats Waller, yeah.
Well, let me ask you something. Have you ever heard of Lil Johnson?
I want to say I have, but I off the top of my head, I can't place her.
Well, I have my favorite of hers is My Stove Is Ready. And there's another one called Bull Moose Jackson.
Now, and that I remember.
My Big Old 10-inch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was some...
Boom.
Yeah, there was...
There I went.
Yeah, there's some... There was some real creativity back then.
Well, I mean... I've got one CD called The Copulating Blues. Now, that's got some stuff on it that you ought to listen to.
That sounds like it's probably right fine.
It is definitely that, and I recommend it highly. Anytime, particularly if you have the opportunity to get a hold of some good pot and smoke it, you just put that on, and you'll be rolling all over your house. And it's just kind of wonderful. You know, they had some pretty risque stuff back in the 20s into the early 30s.
Yeah, until the clampdown came.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess you're right. You were talking about Somerville Lake. Every time I hear about that lake, I start thinking about that dam where they built it and what they were going to name it.
Oh, well, it was going to be named after the community where it was built. Little crossroads, little tiny dot on the map called Gad, G-A-D, and then they realized that it probably wouldn't go over real well naming it Gad Dam.
Oh, yeah, well, that's quite a big lake out there. It really is.
It is, and you know the other side of it is the Gauley River, and it's the lake. It's the lake that creates the massive whitewater effects that draw tens of thousands of people here for rafting and kayaking from August into September. Well, mostly it's September. September and October when they open the spillways and drain the lake for flood control purposes.
Well, I'm glad you and your family had a nice outing today. Beautiful, you can do it.
Oh, it was just lovely, and my daughter and I, not so much Agnes, but my daughter and I have a real hankering to get out onto that glassy water in a kayak or something and paddle around a little bit. I think we could mollify. She wants to do the stand-up thing, but I think we could mollify her with a kayak.
Well.
And so you can rent them. You can rent them. I just need to.
Sounds like a plan, but you better know what you're doing when you get one of those things, because you can be wrong side up real quick.
Yeah, well, that's true. But that's what the life jackets are for, and when you're first learning, you don't go too far from shore until you got your skills down. All I got to do is spring for a roof rack, and we can strap a couple of those things onto the roof of the vehicle, and be having a fine old time on the water in no time flat.
Well, my God, you will definitely appear so you duly have arrived.
I will feel like somebody.
Good for you. You mentioned something earlier about D-Day, and it brought to mind, and today on my Facebook, and I wrote this about back in 2014, 2013, and they'll give you reminders. And if you don't mind, I'd like to share something with you about what I call D-Day Plus.
Sure.
D-Day Plus. We owe much to the Maquis who fought the Nazis in France. I knew one who was imprisoned in Brussels, Belgium, a nurse caught by the Gestapo and scheduled for execution. They had caught her carrying a pistol in her handbag. On the day of her scheduled execution, the Allies liberated her and brought freedom, not death. Her son was a dear friend of mine, and I spent time with him in their home in Louvain, Belgium. And also, one cannot forget the Russian people who suffered so much, and their soldiers in the city of Leningrad and other battles. Besieged for 900 days, 3,000 civilians died each day of hunger, cold, and privation. Today, St. Petersburg will always remain a hero city.
Well said. Well said. And, of course, you know, the idea... And I know it's kind of a mouthful of a word, Jim, but this ahistoricity on display each and every day from this regime, our German allies in World War II, I felt like when I first heard about that story, I felt like I needed to run up the road to the cemetery to see if my uncle, who didn't make it home from France, was still there.
Well, where did they get that shit from? John Belushi in Animal House?
Well, that was one of the things I wondered about. You know, maybe Heather Nauert was homeschooled or something.
I don't know where people get some of these
things. But it's not just that. It's the Canadians. It's the Canadians burning down the White House too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I know that this country, Jim, and I'm not saying you do, and I'm certainly not saying this about the Horn Family Community Congregation, but largely this country thinks that at most history is a parlor game or a trivial pursuit. But when you get to the point where the Nazis were our allies in World War II, you've kind of crossed a line.
Bob, I can tell you where a lot of that stuff started. Back in the 70s, and this was while I was a school marm and was trying to teach kids history that was pretty accurate. Across the hall from me was a teacher who was teaching her kids that Adolf Hitler led Germany in the First World War. And so I saw her after lunch that day. We were teaching sandwich, and I said, Kay, I said, I'm not trying to be a smartass, but I said, you got your kids who are saying that I'm a liar because I... And I said, you might want to take a look at that. And God Boo, that woman got mad as fire. Walked out of that lounge, and I don't think we ever had a civil conversation after that. But this was back in the 70s when kids in social studies in a top flight white school, whatever you want to call them, and was teaching that kind of ridiculousness. And she got it from somewhere. I wonder where she got it from. You've got so much misinformation that's out there, and, you know, they have practically eliminated the teaching of social studies and history and civics and things that help make a well-informed good citizen. But they practically eliminated all that from the curriculum or curricula. But it's just pretty soon, and take one more generation, and these people can write their history any way they want to. I mean,
well, but see, Jim, don't overlook one factor. There is a significant portion of the Republican base for whom the idea that the Germans were the good guys in World War II is a positive outcome for them, because the GOP is awash, is swamped in neo-Nazis now. If they could get away with it, they'd replace that goddamned elephant with a swastika in a minute, because that's just who the Republican base is now. And for them, and you know, from the Holocaust denying to the revisionism, they, you know, I guess they view the Germans as the good guys. I mean, after all, the Russians were commies, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when they had the Nuremberg War Trials, I remember an excerpt from Chief Justice Jackson's opening remarks. We're doing this, so this will not happen again.
And he also said, we do this not because they lost the war, but because they started the war.
Yeah. And it appears as though a lot of, well, I don't know if it ever really went down in Germany. It's always been passed from one generation to the other in certain segments.
Yeah, there's an argument to be made that denazification in the post-World War II years in Germany was not a complete success.
Well, my Lord, let me tell you one thing right here. Remember old guy named Reinhard Heydrich, Hitler's hangman?
Sure.
The one that got off when he was so stupid, he was riding around in an open Mercedes, and he died of his wounds of septicemia. Oh, he was Hitler's number one person. I mean, he was a leader of the Final Solution. He chaired the.
Oh, played brilliantly by Kenneth Branagh, by the way, in that one very
conspiracy.
Conspiracy. Most terribly historically accurate film.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of Heydrich, his wife, of course, was given a castle or something by Hitler, and she was she didn't have to stay there very long, because that part of Bohemia was being overrun by the Russians. But even then, she was so cruel to the people who worked on her estate that the German government first tried to bring her into the war trials. Then she had a court case with the German Republic, not the GDR, the other one, the West Germany. And do you know she was awarded a full general's pension?
I did that not.
Was, yeah, Lena Heydrich. And she had a pension or whatever. I can't remember the name of it. Somewhere near on the Baltic. And it was a notorious gathering place for all the boys who used to wear the black uniform. And that's how they used to cavort around about the good old days.
But the other thing that I think, and you know, some may disagree, and that's fine. But I think there's another reference here that probably bears sussing out, and that is the
And I know you know as much as well as or more than anybody else. You know what the lost cause was in the South.
Yes, sir.
In the immediate aftermath and Reconstruction, the idea that among Southerners that they'd been anything but beat was not really heard much. But within 10 years of the end of the Civil War, the lost cause began to emerge with the death in 1870 of Robert E. Lee. His cult was established. And within 20 years of his death, he was a national, he was a hero in the North, too, for his so-called nobility.
And another ship was the fallen flag.
And so, you know, that thing had a pernicious grasp on the consciousness. So that, to this day, you know, that's who the modern Republican Party gravitates toward. And that's why they still make the same states' rights arguments that people like Jefferson Davis and John C. Calhoun were making. And this is a part of that. Give these people another generation in power, and the entire history of the Second World War will be flipped on its head.
Well,
except for the Japanese, because. Because racism.
Well, you know, if you give me your children at a young enough age, I'll have them for the rest of their lives.
There we go.
And we know who said that. We certainly do. And I would like to say one other thing, you know, to any member of the Horn family who loses or has lost or may lose a pet, they will always, without my even having said so or emailed you to the effect, they will always have my deepest condolences.
Oh, I appreciate that, Jim.
Because I know how much these beautiful creatures mean to us. And by the way, my kitty cat does not like her new name.
No?
No. She's a calico. And she is... I've never seen a cat who is so well socialized. And she just goes up to anybody. She acts like a dog. But she doesn't like patches. But I say, Kitty, she's right there. So her new name is Miss Kitty.
Well, they choose their own sometimes, don't they?
Well, she's a very ladylike young lady, and I thought Miss Kitty would be an appropriate name for her. And I had a cat back in the 70s named Miss Kitty, God rest her. So this is Miss Kitty number 2. And I remember when Todd Rundgren put out an album, he had one of these things that was with the album, and you could write in and put your pet's name in there, and his name came out in computer print, and there it was, Miss Kitty, bigger than hell. So it sort of brought back some memories there. Certainly did. Well, listen, enough of my jabberwocking, and you just watch out when you cross that kadam. Now, you hear?
God damn it, I hear you.
When I first heard that, you know, I just wonder, was that the only town submerged?
Oh, no. There were lots of, I mean, it's a big lake. And everywhere that lake is, there were farms and communities and there was a lot of heartbreak and heartache, and a lot of lives turned upside down in the creation of that thing.
Well, I've been looking at that movie Wild River, you know, when the TVA dammed up, and people had to leave their homesteads.
Yeah,
we say it far for generations.
Dams are not ecologically friendly
edifices. And about 99% of the time when one goes in, you can bet that the wealthy people will make a killing on it. But the people who will be most affected are the people who have the who in effect lose everything they have. Dams are a huge environmental justice issue the world over. Look at what happened in China with the creation of the Three Gorges Dam.
That's quite an undertaking, and they still don't know what's going to happen with that really in the long run. But I mean, you know, look at Lake Mead, and if it weren't for Lake Mead, I don't think we'd have Las Vegas.
Oh, there's no Las Vegas, but Lake Mead is threatened because of drought and climate change.
I know. I hear that the level of the water is dangerously low.
Well, compared to its past, in its former so-called glories, Lake Mead is a puddle now.
That's what I've heard. That's very bad. Well, listen, you take care, and I wish you all your best in your future outings, and just keep your sunbonnet on, and I guess you'll be okay.
By the way, you just got a note from Scott out in San Diego. He said, tell Jim my late cat, Michi the Calico, photo attached, looked like she'd been fired from a cannon through the earth tone section of a Sherwin-Williams paint store.
Oh, dear.
If Miss Kitty doesn't work for her either, try the name Sherwin. I think it's a name that would work for a male or a female cat, and particularly calicos.
Tell Scott I said noted, and I appreciate his suggestion, and I may have to take him up on it, but I hope this will do. Honest to God, Bob, this cat has got to be one of the best natured creatures I have ever had.
Well, you know, we've got two in the house, Jim. One is, of course, Mushu, the Siamese. And she's a Siamese, and thus she is simply above it all. The other one is a rescue. She was brought in, you know, just weeks old. She was feral, and she's moved into her second year of life, and she tries real hard to get over the feral part. And,
oh, yeah, I know.
And she is solid black from nose to tail, with the exception of kind of a thin spot over her eyes that make it look like she's got, instead of black Groucho Marx eyebrows, they look like pale gray white, and it gives her this expressive face. And
I can imagine.
Agnes called her Nyx. I wanted to call her Rorschach. But damned if she doesn't. But Nyx was what stuck, and I can't leave well enough alone, so I had to extend that to Nixon.
And she
answers to Nixon, Jim. I wonder if that evil old sack of sin is living in my house.
Well, you never can tell. I mean, there it is.
If I catch her with a bottle of barbiturates and a bottle of whiskey mumbling about the Jews, I'll know.
There you go. Well, I'll say one thing about feral cats. I've never had anything but rescues. I mean, I've never been one to go to a pet store and pick one out and stuff like that.
No.
The ones I have, I found on my patio, or I found needing a place to stay. And they just came and they stayed. Until they passed away.
Well, I go over and visit Dr. Bill from time to time, and he hopes to be back on the air come Monday, by the way. He's been a little poorly. But over in his neighborhood, there have to be at least 30 feral cats just wandering through the neighborhood. It's a kitty.
That's a pity. Shame. It's a pity that something can't be done at least to neutralize the situation.
I mean, it's an outright kitty gang.
Well, see, here we have a group called ARCAR, Raleigh Animal. I've lost my mind, and I still belong to it. But it's a rescue operation. And what we do, as a matter of fact, I recently, by way of a phone and a friend, got 5 cats neutered and spayed today. And they'll take these cats, they're beautiful cats, and they'll take them to one of the pet stores. And our car has to come in and clean the cages and stuff like that. But at least there's a chance that they will be purchased by someone or given to someone, and to give that animal.
Well, it would be nice if something like that could happen over in Dr. Bill's neighborhood, because they're all over the place. And the thing is, some of the residents take matters into their own hands, and it's not nice.
Well, you know, I used to be pretty active with that. As a matter of fact, since I've been here, I placed almost 40 cats. And believe you me, it is not easy. I mean, I've read ads in the paper.
Oh, I know, I know. And you know, the simple act of, and, you know, I know how, like, PETA was notorious for driving their euthanasia van around and just capturing feral cats and killing them.
That's not right.
But with the live humane traps, it's not easy. Feral cats do not want to become captive cats.
You're saying they do not want to become captive cats?
Yeah, I mean, so anybody who does that work is serious in their
you're talking about
their good intentions,
stuff like that, and it is not easy. No, it's not. But at least you know that you're doing a better thing. And here's the thing, and I'm not trying to exalt myself by any means, please, but would you believe that a number of the feral cats that I've taken in were, guess what, just a wee bit pregnant?
Isn't that like a little bit like a little bit radioactive?
Right. And many is the night that I had sat up all night on the sofa with the bed, the queening bed, you know, right there by the mother, and it just helped her out and let her know that she was not alone.
And safe, yeah.
All right, well, listen, I've taken too much time. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right. Jim, you have yourself a very good evening. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Always, Bob. Bye-bye.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our buddy Jim calling from, well, over in Dr. Bill's neck of the woods. Meanwhile, note coming in from James out in Illinois. And another thing, conservative Republicans freed the slaves, so the blacks, he spells that with a capital T and a capital B, the blacks should support the Donald. I don't understand why. They've been voting for Democrats for 100 years. And you know, and that's a legitimate question. When this many howling ahistorical errors are made, at what point in time do we look up and go, okay, this isn't cute anymore? This isn't funny? This is deliberate? We would not be the first government to rewrite history. The Soviets did it all the time. And among the Mexica people, when they moved into the Valley of Mexico and moved onto that marshy island on the verges of Lake Texcoco that none of the other peoples wanted, they completely invented a history for themselves that out of whole cloth. And when one revered speaker came along, he ordered all the fawnskin books to be burnt and a new history created at his dictate that had absolutely nothing to do with the actual origins of those people. It's nothing new, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's okay. And you know what? A country that can't be honest about its own history is not going to prove itself
very good at very many other things. Well, hey, off in far La Crosse, it's our buddy Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
Hey, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, phenomenal. No, it was, when you were talking about, I've been meaning to tell you about this, but whenever I hear that name...
You mean Colleon?
Because the Colleon French for Guillaume.
Yeah.
You know, which means, you know, a buckwit.
Yeah, but see, that's his stage name. He would not deliberately change. He would not deliberately name himself Black Fuckwit, would he?
I don't know, but I read up his biography. I guess there's a wiki entry, and he's from Nigeria. And I know Niger is the French colony, and Nigeria was the British part. But they also speak French in parts of Nigeria, and so it wouldn't be. I mean, wouldn't it be funny if it were in part based on a corruption of that or a misunderstanding of that? I just love how inventive the French language is, you know, because a fuck-up is a couillonade. And there's just so many derivatives of the word couillon. But you were talking about Nauert. Heather Nauert?
Yeah.
There's a word akin to the word that Samantha Bee used, and that would be conne, C-O-N-N-E, or also connasse.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the etymology of feckless.
Oh, no, no.
And its relation to the aforementioned fuckwit.
Connasse. Connasse is, con is, you can call a man a con, which means idiot. Connasse is the feminine for idiot. And connerie is idiocy. So there's just so many derivatives. But yeah, I'd call her a con or connasse. But... Yeah, no, you're talking about history and the rewriting of history. That's what worries me. The thought that, well, they're already doing that, aren't they? When they edit textbooks to say that the African slaves were workers, right?
Yeah, workers just came here and enjoyed the work. Okay. I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but I have a moment for you, okay? And if you've got the duct tape and the hockey puck handy, Flavio, you might want to put it to use. You may recall that we have from time to time mentioned a character on this program by the name of Jesse Lee Peterson.
Refresh my memory.
He's a right wing talker, and he's a real darling over there because he's black, and he says things that make white wing conservatives, so called, they're not conservative, white wing Republicans feel good about themselves. All right. You, Flavio, may scream or may not. But I do want to issue a stern and serious hockey puck warning to the members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who are persons of color, because this is a 2-minute clip, and you are not going to be okay. Just so we're clear about that. So just sort of stand by, Flavio. This is going to blow your mind. This is Jesse Lee Peterson discussing slavery. Okay?
Mm. Okay.
You ready for this? It's a doozy.
I'm ready.
It's 2018 in America. Does racism exist?
Absolutely not. And it has never existed. Whoa!
No, it's
Whoa!
It's a made-up word.
What about the picture in the 60s with the German shepherds on the black guy, the civil rights movement, and the cops, and the guy like that?
Well, that's because you were having protests. Whenever you could have a protest today, and if people go out of control, you're going to see the same thing. It was just a protest. And you're...
Now, let me point out that this is being done in somebody's basement bar or something. That's what the... That's what the decor looks like. And there's about nine unopened bottles of Maker's Mark brand bourbon at the back of the bar. Now, anytime I listen to Jesse Lee Peterson, I think there's probably a missing bottle of Maker's Mark or probably Old Panther Piss somewhere in the equation. But just to sort of set the scene.
Hearing this from a man, I grew up in Alabama. I grew up under the Jim Crow laws. I went to an all-black school. There were signs that said for colors only, for whites only.
That sounds pretty racist.
Yeah. But it wasn't racist. It was a law that was brought about by the Democrats. And they brought that law into effect, and it separated people by law. But yet, most blacks and whites got along. They knew that all white people were not against black people. It was a law, and people just obeyed the law at the time. And when I was growing up, I had to pick cotton. The guys were taking out...
No, this is the part where you really bite down hard on the hockey puck, y'all.
Born on a plantation.
Have you ever picked cotton?
No, sir.
You have not lived until you pick cotton.
You're being too controversial for me. You're going to get my show taken off the air. It's fun to pick cotton.
It's fun. It makes a man out of you.
Really?
You know, I said it once on my radio show. That because most blacks are so lazy now, because of the government taking care of them,
uh-huh.
And then a lot of them are born with single mothers only in the homes, and yes. The mothers don't make them work. And I said, I'm going to go to Alabama, buy some land, create a plantation, and I'm going to take the blacks back down there to show them how to work and be independent and earn their way. And all hell broke loose when I said that. Oh, he's for slavery. He's for that. But I knew what I meant by that.
Yeah, Flavio, he knew what he meant by that.
Oh, well, you know, how much you want to bet this person is getting paid handsomely?
Oh, very. He doesn't have to sweat any $200 a night to keep a radio program on the air. Oh, no, not him. Mm-mm.
How much you want to bet?
Oh, I won't take the wager. The man's got enough money to burn a sopping wet elephant with sopping wet $100 bills. And by the way, I did notice as I watched along, because I had the benefit of the video, one of those Maker's Mark bottles, Flavio.
Yeah.
Dead soldier. Empty.
What?
Yeah, but one of those Maker's Mark bottles is just empty. Yeah. No. But hear that? You haven't lived until you've chopped cotton.
Oh, you know, and you know, the today's
in them
black
old
people,
cotton fields back home. Yep. Sorry.
Yeah, so now I know where that wait a cotton picking minute expression comes from. But yeah, no, that doesn't surprise me. I mean I mean I'm horrified. Kind of like, you know, like when, you know, you see a totaled car with the person still in it or something like that, you know, calling for their mother or something, you know. And they got the whole engine block up on their chest, you know, that kind of thing. But it's not surprising since the country was careening towards that anyway for the last 30 years.
True, you know? True.
I mean, it really was. And the thing is, okay, now, I don't want to make you get the hockey puck, okay?
No, see, I just sit here lashed to the mast, you know. Everybody else got the beeswax in their ears. I'm lashed to the mast. I just have to hear the song of the sirens, okay? So you don't have to worry about that.
Oh, okay. But, you know, this, you already know this. This is long in the making. And it was a bipartisan effort. I take issue with you sometimes because I don't know if you're making fun of I don't know who you're making fun of when someone brings up the economic term neoliberalism.
Well, we've had we've had this conversation because neoliberal is a word that means something. Okay?
Very specific.
It is very specific and used in its specific context. It has words are like, you know, railroad trains. They carry freight.
It has validity.
But when it is used as a placeholder for something that some privileged, petulant, political infant doesn't like, it is worthy of mockery.
We agree on that.
And so when you hear me refer to somebody as a neoliberal establishment shill, you know that I'm talking from the attitude of one of these political infants who is loaded with usually white privilege,
mm-hmm.
and has exactly zero understanding of the situation in which they find themselves. And so they lash out by screaming, neoliberal establishment shill. And then they say stupid shit like, Jill could have won, and we need more third-party candidates.
Exactly, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. But bear with me, I was talking about neoliberalism in the strict exception.
Right, okay? And no offense, Flavio, but that's kind of a... That's kind of Coles to Newcastle around here.
What I wanted to say, if I might, is that so this was a long time in the making, and it was a bipartisan thing. It wasn't just, I mean, the Republicans, of course, go full bore, okay? But the doctrine was, you know, it was espoused by Tony Blair, but it started with Margaret Thatcher.
Right, sure. It's Margaret Thatcher and the so-called Tina effect. There is no alternative to globalism.
Exactly. And, you know, and so you had this, you had even the Labor Party, which is, was a respectable left party at one point, you know, being co-opted by this economic doctrine, which basically makes the market, the end-all and be-all. And that's what I mean when I didn't buy into the Pizzagate thing. I didn't buy into the murder of Seth Rich thing. By the right, and probably Russian trolls, okay? But there is something to be said about, you know, Bill Clinton signing into law the abolition of Glass-Steagall, you know...
NAFTA, sure.
NAFTA. There's something to be said about that. So don't put us all in the same bag.
I'm not putting anybody in any bag, Flavio.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't think Hillary Clinton is evil. We'd be a lot better, you know, here in this country. We'd be a lot better than, you know, what we're under now. There would still be pushes to privatize public education, reduce the commons, you know, our shared commons, defund government, you know, reduce government. I think that would still go on to a certain extent.
Well, and there's a discussion to be had, Flavio, as to whether or not that's typical Republican policy, you know, the diminution of the commons. Or, you know, is that neoliberalism? And those are academic conversations that are available to be had. But my contention here is that the word has largely, and for the most part, you know, neoliberal is not a word you're going to catch the maggots using. Because neoliberal, that's five syllables.
Too many syllables. That's too many syllables.
So it's mostly going to be it's a word that is mostly going to be abused by the purity left, who think that they live in a world they don't live in. Now, just as an aside today, I saw something I want so bad I can taste it. Not taste it, but, oh, I want this thing. We were packing up and getting ready to leave the lake when a family walked in, and, you know, there's a little beach there, and people just kind of sit on the green grassy bank and everything, and they go out, and, you know, there's some buoys out there, you know, don't swim any further because it gets real deep real fast. But this family walked in, and they had this humongous floaty, you know, this blow-up floaty.
Okay.
In the shape of a giant white unicorn with red, white, and blue stars and stripes, star-spangled wings.
In the shape of a giant what?
Unicorn.
Oh, my God.
And I want... they're selling them in Beckley at Sam's Club, and I want to go get one, and I want to paint on the side of it, S.S. Jill Stein. And I want to have Agnes take a picture of me floating along on Somersville Lake in it, oblivious to my surroundings, you know, shirt off, getting fried by the sun because I don't have sense enough not to get sunburned and sit out in the, you know, in other words, a perfect manifestation of, right.
Yeah, no, I...
But would that be delightful or what?
That would be dangerous. I wear a lot of cover because I have that problem too, melanin deficiency, and I don't want to get skin cancer.
Yeah, right.
And plus, I'm bald, so then, you know, there's that too.
Yeah, I've learned the hard lesson of male pattern baldness in recent years. Top of the head sunburns suck.
Yeah, you want to wear a hat and probably some SPF 50 or something. But yeah, no, I was just thinking, you know, I don't think that it's purity necessarily to criticize somebody that takes money from the payday loan people. And we're talking W. Wasserman Schultz.
No, okay? You're not. Well, I mean, you don't try to define it for me because that's not how I use it.
Okay, just so that I'm not a bad person for thinking that sucks.
No, you're also not a bad person for thinking that the money that is in our politics is the ruin of our politics. You know, I'm never gonna jump in on the. Gosh, we need more money in politics side of the argument. That's not what I'm about.
Right. But of course, if it's between a right-wing fascist and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course I'm going to go with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, but I'm going to go with my eyes open, right? Knowing this is not a perfect situation. And I going forward, I'd like to see more candidates that don't have that kind of baggage. You know, not necessarily entirely pure, but not beholden that bad. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I understand.
And it's kind of frustrating because, you know, I don't want to be classed with... You know, even though I'm friends with them and everything, I don't want to be... I'm not in the same bag as a Jimmy Dore, okay?
Well, I, you know, if you were, I don't think we'd be having that conversation right now.
I'm not in the same bag. I find him entertaining sometimes. Some of the things that he says are true.
But you do... I have clarified, and you do understand what I'm talking about when I just turn on the reverb and yell neoliberal establishment shill. You've got it now, right, Flavio?
I got it. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, sometimes I feel that I misunderstand, you know, and it's like, no, I'm not in the same vein as the Steiniacs, okay? Or the burners or bust, you know?
No, I'm kind of a hard ass right now. And maybe I'll find a way to run some more of the community away by saying this. But I'm not just sitting here chomping at the damn bit, Flavio, waiting for Bernie to announce his 2020 presidential ambitions.
I hope he doesn't.
It's the last. It feels to me like the last damn thing we need. I mean, I'm 55, okay? And at the tender age of 55, I think it's my generation's goddamn turn. Now, yeah. I know where it's her turn got us relative to Hillary Clinton. But really, you know, I revere and I was taught to revere my elders. But at some point in time where the presidency is concerned, you have to take issues of succession into account mm-hmm. and the frailty of the human body. And there are some people who are hearty and hale up into their 100th birthday. I knew one of those men. His name was Ken Heckler. He was playing tennis every day of his life at 95.
I knew someone like that in France. I tutored a gentleman. His name was Alexis. That's the Breton name. It means Alexander in the Breton language.
But can we acknowledge that they're relatively rare?
Oh, very. He did, you know, and I tutored him in Spanish. But yeah, he was fit as a fiddle, lucid as, you know, the lights were always on. Yeah, and he was also a cross-country skier. And I think he may have also played tennis. I don't remember now. But no, I think I've posted on Facebook before that I do hope that, you know, he runs for this Senate seat back.
Hey,
I think
yeah.
He can be more effective. He can be more effective there.
You're a language guy. You know what the word Senate comes from. The Latin word senex, which means old. The Senate is an old people's club. Yeah. Bernie belongs in the Senate. Elizabeth Warren belongs in the Senate.
I think he can be much more effective in thwarting the worst of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's legislation in the Senate, and I hope that he has a good sense to not run again.
Well, I certainly tend to agree.
To run again. Do you?
When a politician will not say, I ain't gonna run, I assume that the answer is yes. And to be fair, before everybody goes, you know, fucking neoliberal establishment, shill Bob Kincaid, goddamn it, I don't want Joe Biden to run either. I don't want anybody over 68 to run.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have younger, you know, people. You know, who do you suppose? Maybe. Are you thinking more of in line of a Cory Booker or?
You're the one that brought up taking money from, and I mean, he's got big pharma problems.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, we're not gonna. We got to get somebody in there that.
Right, and I'll go ahead and say this. It's probably going to have to be optimally a woman.
Okay.
And even hyper optimally a woman of color.
So you're talking Kamala Harris.
Who I find the idea of supporting her for president absolutely odious. Mm-hmm. Because given her conduct relative to Al Franken, I don't think she can be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then there's her conduct as the Attorney General of California, which is troubling to say the least. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris. You know, now is there somebody I dislike more than Kamala Harris? Yes, there absolutely is, and that's Kirsten Gillibrand.
Oh yeah.
And P.S. Gender has not a goddamn thing to do with this. I'm not itching to vote for a pasty-faced, doughy old white man. And I also recognize that the perfect is the enemy of the good. So I'm not going to get a pony when it comes time to vote in 2020. But I've got a list of those. I've got a better list of those that I don't like than those that I do, because that's just how the Democratic bench is right now. It's if you look at it, if you consider it, say, in a baseball perspective, we've got a lot of 40-year-old sluggers who were all-stars in years past, but who are just barely hitting for average now. If I have to vote for Joe Biden, I'll vote for Joe Biden. If I have to vote for Bernie, I'll vote for Bernie. If I have to vote for Kamala Harris, I will vote for Kamala Harris. But I'd rather not have to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page. We have to strive for better candidates, no? At some point. And younger people have to get involved in the process at the precinct level and, you know, make it happen. I mean, I think that, you know, I apologize if I didn't initially believe in the Russian interference. Well, because you have to give me a discount because I'm from Latin America. And everything was the Russians. The Russians are coming. The Russians this, the Russians that.
When, in fact, the United States of America was meddling in more elections than the Russians ever dreamed of, I acknowledge that.
Okay, so that's where my bias comes from, okay? But that being said, I think the greater danger was, and again, I ascribe this to Russian meddling as well, the abstention. Record abstention, you know, like 43% of the people that were eligible, wasn't it something like that? 43% didn't vote.
Yeah, at all, period.
At all, period. Stayed home.
Bad.
That's the death of a democracy.
Well, then democracy has been dying for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean,
in this country, at least.
And so what I'd like to see going forward is the Democrats actually trying to do something about, trying to do something about luring, and I mean, it is a lure, okay? It is a lure, because you have to entice, cajole, bring people back into the fold, right?
Right.
And how do you do that? Well, You show them what you're about, and I don't know. I think some of the candidates eschewing super PAC money is a good thing. How do you feel about that?
That's fine as long as you can compete. Because understand, I do kind of insist, Flavio, that we not be complete hypocrites about this.
Right.
Because 90% of the time when we decry money in politics, what we're decrying is the money that the other side has. Okay.
Kind of like, that joke that Mark Twain tells about, what is it, Carnegie? is money's tainted. Taint mine and taint yours.
Exactly. you know, if we had an equivalent of the Koch brothers out there who were pumping Koch brothers money into, and you know, the bete noir of the right is George Soros, and George Soros is just, he's got a little hand crank down in the basement. He's just cranking out million dollar bills all day long. But that's bullshit. It's not true. But if we had somebody that was cranking out money like the Koch brothers are on our side, we wouldn't be so upset about the money in politics, because it would mean that we had a better chance of winning. But we don't. We've got a loose conglomeration of limousine liberals who are absolutely mesmerized by the idea of star fucking. You know what that concept means.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, we get mad at them every election season because, oh, God damn it, George Clooney gave money to Hillary Clinton. Oh, the devil. Oh, why didn't he give $1 billion to Bernie? God damn it. Because, see, they would have loved him if he'd given $1 million to Bernie. And that's what I mean when I say I insist that we not be fucking hypocrites about it.
Right, and, yeah, I think that it's an ideal, you know, but... But yeah, but we don't have anything on our side like Adelson or Koch or...
No, we damned well don't.
Or Mercer. We don't. Yeah. And that's... Yeah, but I just wanted to clear that up because I was like thinking, oh God, I hope he doesn't think that I'm in the same camp as, you know...
No,
Jill
not at all.
Jill Stein or... Oh, for God's sake, far be it. No.
Oh, and please, if you get a chance, there's an article out there that answers the question, what did Jill Stein do with the $7 million that she raised for the recounts?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I'd like to know that. Has that question been answered?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Let me see if I can find it. Mike in Cascadia sent this.
Because that's what was touted, you know. John, she's doing good. She's investing in the recount and everything.
Over at the New Yorker, Gia Tolentino wrote a book called "The Fiends and the Folk Heroes of Grifter Season," and it's a larger piece. About
what is her name? Gia?
Gia, J-I-A, Tolentino.
Tolentino.
The Fiends and the Folk Heroes of Grifter Season.
The Fiends and the Folk Heroes
of Grifter Season. Got it?
And that's over at the New Yorker.
And it goes through a bunch of current grifters, and Gia Tolentino writes, "Grifter season comes irregularly, but it comes often in America, which is built around mythologies of profit and reinvention and spectacular ascent. The shady, audacious figures at its center exist on a spectrum from folk hero to disgrace. The season begins when the public catches on to a series of scammers of a particularly appealing sort, the kind who... provoke both schadenfreude and admiration." And it goes on from there. And the article itself is fascinating. But down toward the bottom.
Okay.
And I have to find it here. I hate it when the pop-up ads come along.
I hate those. Or when they start playing videos when you didn't ask for it.
Oh, that drives me crazy. Oh, damn it. Let me go back to the email here and see if I can, because there's another link.
Okay.
I've got a first generation iPad Air, and I think it's about at it.
I'll get back. Here we go. I think I've got the right link now. Yeah. It's published over at the Daily Beast. This article is. It is by Charles Davis. It was published on the 30th day of May of this year.
Daily Beast.
What happened to Jill Stein's recount millions? And then the subheading says the Green Party candidate last filed a form with the FEC since September 2017, and it looks likely that there won't be a vote on how to use the unspent recount funds.
Wow.
The opening paragraphs read as follows, Flavio.
Go ahead.
Shortly after the 2016 election, Jill Stein raised more than $7 million from shell-shocked liberals eager to pursue a swing state recount. Nearly 2 years later, the U.S. Green Party's last candidate for president is still spending that money. Ongoing litigation, travel costs, and staff salaries are also likely to eat up whatever is left, meaning those who donated to Stein are unlikely to receive a once-promised chance to vote on how the post-recount money would be spent, nor have donors been given much of a window into how Stein is actually spending their donations. The last FEC filing from the Stein campaign was for the month of September 2017, and the last update from the campaign itself came in a post on April 20th, in which it said it was down to $932,178 in recount funds. And the article goes from there.
Wow.
From the moment Stein started raising money for a recount, there were reasons to be skeptical. The Green Party's nominee for president was launching an effort to ensure the integrity of our elections, asking for $2.5 million, getting it, doubling the goal, and then doubling it again. All of this was done after Stein publicly dismissed reports that Russian state actors had sought to undermine the integrity of the vote, and after seemingly increasingly unconcerned with who actually won in November.
Wow.
And the author writes, she was the first in a legion of resistance grifters in this telling, a charge amplified by President-elect Donald Trump. In reality,
I like that. Resistance grifters.
Yeah.
love capitalism. Yeah.
But I mean, this is no piece of light reading. It goes on and on and on. Talking about the scientists who were concerned about the integrity of the vote in some of the states. David Jefferson, a computer scientist at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, says there's good reason to keep fighting. An expert on election security, he provided technical support and guidance during the initial recount effort. It absolutely was not a Stein campaign cash grab, he told the Daily Beast. And while examining voting machines and their source code may not change the result of the last election, Stein's attorneys would quickly note that they are not trying to. It could help secure the next one, Jefferson argued. It's about transparency. To be perfectly clear, we never really had any evidence of vote hacking. The point we've always been making is that you have to look. You have to check. You don't just accept the results of complex software, especially proprietary software. You don't just trust it. But the fact of the matter is, in September 2017, Carl Romanelli, a former Green Party candidate for Senate in Pennsylvania, got paid $2,000 that month, plus $272.50 in travel for recount organizing services, according to a filing with the Federal Election Commission. And he also worked as a state organizer and a field organizer. There's pretty good evidence that those several millions of dollars did not go to actual recount-related stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, Jill Stein, I mean, my God.
And just remember, she'll be back in 2020 like a toxic mushroom springing up after a spring rain, and you'll get... And her purpose seems to be to make sure that Republicans continue to win,
I guess there's sort of some sort of a long con going on here where someday she and the Greens replace the Democratic Party. Because as anyone with two functioning brain cells to rub together knows, there's never going to be three viable parties in the United States because it's a winner-take-all system. There's only going to be two parties. And whichever party fails will be replaced by its more strident wing.
Yeah, no, she attended meetings with Flynn in Russia.
Now, she says that nobody ever even spoke to each other at that table. She never said more than "До свидания, товарищ," to lovable, huggable, cuddly, pooty poot. And she didn't. She certainly didn't say anything to that warmonger Flynn.
Oh yeah, right.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing happened there.
Yeah, I never believed.
But nonetheless, she largely told the Senate to go fuck itself. Relative to its investigation.
Yeah, anybody that's enamored of her is stupid, honestly. And I believe, you know, that there are a lot of plants. You know. I mean, there are, It was a long time in coming, but eventually the U.S. would be victim to the same things that happen in European countries after World War II, because the left was winning. The anti-fascists, you know, the communists and the socialists fought the Mussolini and Hitler. And I remember reading Chomsky about this years ago, 20 years ago. They actually sent thugs from the AFL-CIO to break up unions in Italy and France because they were afraid that the socialist parties and the communist parties were going to win because they fought in the resistance to the Nazis. And so in order to squelch that, they sent union busters and from the AFL-CIO to Italy. Did you read about this?
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
And that's the history. You know, it's a dismal history, but it's a history that's documented.
Well, you have to remember that in the aftermath of World War I and the suppression of the Wobblies.
Oh, the Wobblies too. Yeah,
the Wobblies were communist affiliated, certainly socialist. And then there was the Communist Workers' Party of America and the American Communist Workers' Party and the American Communist Party of Workers and they all hated each other's guts.
All right.
But with the when organized labor finally gets its feet under it under the Roosevelt administration, this isn't a criticism, it's just a fact, it's just history.
Okay.
They did so with the understanding that they would forever disavow any form of anything that wasn't capitalism. And so, for instance, you wind up with a fire-breathing Republican in the form of John L. Lewis running the United Mine Workers. And to this day, if you are going to be, I don't think it's changed, if you're going to be an actual officer of a union local, you have to sign an oath swearing that you are not now, nor have you ever been, a member of a communist organization.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
So it's not at all surprising that the AFL-CIO would do that, because they were permitted the seat that they got at the table on the condition that they could be trusted to be good little capitalists. And see, that's and that's always been one of the complaints, is that on the one hand, the Knights of Labor and the Wobblies and so forth were revolutionaries, and they wanted to turn the table over. They just wanted to wreck the place and start over fresh. You know, with a workers' paradise of some sort. The AF of L, and later on the Congress of Industrial Organizations, the CIO, which joined forces to become the AF of L-CIO, they said, no, capitalism's good. We want a seat at the table. And the capitalists said, this is great. We're going to give them a seat at a table. We're going to give them a little tiny slice of the pie. And then we're going to keep slicing away at their slice of the pie till they're looking at an empty plate. And then we'll look at them and go, but yeah, you got a seat at the table.
Yeah. And that's how it went down. That's true.
And that's how you go from being at the table to on the menu.
I just think that we're going to have to do something, because this capitalism thing is destroying the planet, or has destroyed the planet, is destroying the planet. Yeah, and I'm not even sure there's anything we can do anymore about it. Are you?
Sometimes, and I hate to say this, Flavio, sometimes things have to be allowed to run their course. Have you ever been sick and gone to the doctor, and the doctor says, well, you're going to be okay, but you're going to hate it getting okay, because the damn thing's just going to have to run its course?
Yeah, I'm not going to prescribe an antibiotic because it's
a goddamn virus.
It's a virus, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Capital, you know, and to a certain extent, even Marx argued that capitalism would have to run its course. I mean, there's a lot of theoretical stuff in Marx and Hegel that you know, I look at it as diagnostic work, identifying the problems. But yeah, in the case of anarcho-capitalism run wild, which is what we have right now, you know, it only got reined in a little bit during beginning with the FDR administration, because it had proven itself to be such an unflinching disaster, and so the effort was to save it from itself, and the idea actually worked, you know, with caveats, fairly well. But for the, you know, but for the hardcores and the dead enders and the hard cases, they're never happy being regulated. They want the untrammeled ability to eat themselves alive.
Yeah. You know what my hope is? My hope is that we will bring about a new cohort of neo-Keynesians to counter the neoliberals. That would be nice.
Well, yeah, you know? And I remember sitting in a seminar years ago where I first heard about TINA, you know, There Is No Alternative, and the person doing the presentation said, actually, there is, and it's Lois. The alternative to TINA is Lois, locally owned, independently sourced.
Mm-hmm.
But it's awfully hard, you know, it's awfully hard to compete with, just as an example. The other day I was doing some weed eating, and I own two pairs of overalls, blue denim overalls. They're by the same company, Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Liberty overalls used to be made down in Alabama, mm-hmm. and you could dynamite the damn things and not ruin them. I mean, they were the epitome of their form. They were They were right next door to being a platonic ideal. So I reached into the bag that had my two pairs of overalls out in it, and I pulled one out and I put it on. And they are as tough as they are is proven by the fact that one of those pairs of overalls is a year old and the other is 25 years old, and I could not tell the difference with my naked eye.
Wow. They don't make clothes like that anymore.
However, I was able to find out pretty quick, because only one of them had a tag in it that said Made in USA. And that was the pair of overalls that I bought for our wedding reception 25 years ago.
Wow.
Because Agnes and I both wore overalls for our hillbilly wedding reception that we catered ourselves with homemade barbecue. And amazingly, they still fit, too. There's a lot of forgiveness in a pair of overalls. But I don't think my Not Made in America overalls are going to last 25 years.
Yeah, probably not.
But by golly, instead of paying some garment worker in a sewing factory in Alabama $10 an hour 25 years ago, well, hell, let's move the sewing plant to Honduras and pay some campesino that we've driven off the land 25 cents an hour. And the corporate board is gonna make out like bandits, and Wall Street will love us.
Yeah, that's the problem. You remember the movie, the Canadian documentary, The Corporation?
Sure, yeah.
That's the science of exploitation. They went into this company's trash and they found out, you know, they were measuring everything by the minute,
yeah.
You know, by the unit. And how much they could squeeze out of a peasant.
Right, and consider the fact that, there's a lot of people, because they live in civilization, who listen to this program, there's a lot of people who talk about the wonderful stuff that they find at Costco. And mm-hmm. If you work at Costco, Costco is union-friendly. There are people who have spent their entire careers, their entire working lives at Costco because it was a great job to have. They made a fair wage and they enjoyed the work they did. The same cannot be said of working at Sam's Club or Walmart. There mm-hmm. just aren't a whole lot of 30-year Walmart employees. Who does Wall Street love? Wall Street loves Walmart a lot more than Costco, even though the model that Costco operates on is far more economically sustainable than what Walmart does, because Wall Street rewards untrammeled, deregulated growth at a level that in any other system would be referred to as cancerous growth. Growth run wild. And
it's unsustainable.
And I've been writing to Costco for 15 years begging for one store within a day's drive of me in West Virginia. Can't get it. Not interested. They're in Ohio. They're in Virginia. They're in Kentucky. They're in Tennessee, I think.
I don't think I've never seen a Costco around here.
They're damn sure in Pennsylvania. They're in Maryland. But this one little island of mountains, they won't come here because it makes no economic sense for them. It's just how it works. By golly, I am looking forward to going to Trader Joe's because I've found me a couple of them. Thanks to Renee for finding the first one that led me to find the second and the third. Todd was talking about Trader Joe's the other night, and yes, I'm at least going to go in and see one just to be reminded what it's like. Flavio, I got to get out of here because we're at the top of the hour, but it's been a delightful conversation, my friend.
Likewise. You have a very good evening, and take care.
Absolutely.
And I'll talk to you again soon.
And remember, da-di-da-di-da-da-da-da, eh-eh.
All right.
Later, my friend. Bye now.
Take care.
A most erudite man, our buddy Flavio, up in La Crosse. It is time to get out of here. Let's see. We've still got $7.50 to go on the final challenge. Thank you very kindly to Charlene for responding to Rico's. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, for responding to Ralph's. The $7.50 technically will wipe out Glenn's. But however, if we've got another geo worker out there, geophysicist, geologist, geographer, geolocator, geo, aren't we happy? You're welcome to jump in on that challenge, just because it was so delightfully specific, and it is related specifically to Glenn's upcoming 63rd birthday. So I'll sort out the math. We're going to have a deficit tomorrow, again for Friday on the front porch, but it's not as harrowing as $530. And thanks to Jack in Shreveport for getting us all started. It is a tremendous help. Thanks to all of you who share in your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation of years duration. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air, a considerably smaller number. Thank you very much to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.